Thank you. Thank you. Perfect. Okay, so I could use a crane company, said Ben. Thank you. Bart.
Airlines.
Okay. What about this? What if I were to start a hydroelectric dam and I let water flow through my dam and it turned electric turbines and made me millions of dollars? What if I were to do a bungee jumping? Bungee jumping company, you could jump off my 8-story tower. Well, you may ask why we're what did you say? I'm sorry? Okay, great. So the principle is gravity, and I can't invent that. It's bigger than me. But in about 2 or 3 minutes here, we came up with 4, 5, 6, 7 different things that you could do to use gravity to make money. Now, we're going to talk about a principle of negotiation, and this is a broad principle. Later on in the class, we're going to talk about how to use this principle specifically and how to get past gatekeepers to the decision maker in big organizations so you can sell your products to people in big organizations, which is kind of it's a challenge to a lot of salespeople. A lot of salespeople don't know where to start. But what would you say is a number one principle in negotiation? If you had to say one thing that was important in negotiation, what would you say? Yes, go ahead. Tell me your name.
Eric.
Okay. Trust. I really like that. That's a great one. Thank you for sharing. Any other ideas? Always a little give and take. I agree with that. I'm going to tell you what I think is one of the most important things in negotiating. And I think it's a principle just as big as gravity. It's understanding the other party's position. I'm going to write this in big letters first. And let me tell you what I mean by this. Have any of you ever, well, let me give you an example. Let's say I'm in my backyard and I'm digging around in my garden and I find a diamond. Now, by the way, anyone who's been in my backyard knows that there's no diamonds back there, okay? But let's say I'm really lucky and I find a diamond and I say to my wife, I say, hey, Katie, I'm going to take this to the market and try to sell it. She says, great, make me some money. And so I take it down to the market, and in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, I bet you I can get $10,000 for this diamond. And I see an experienced diamond trader, and he takes one look at my diamond, and he says, wow, that's a great-looking diamond. He knows it's worth at least $100,000. Okay? Now, if I come to him and I say, who wants to be a diamond trader with me right now? Any volunteers? Go ahead.
Sure.
Okay, so if I come to you and I say, I really need $10,000, but I'm going to be a little bit sneaky, and I'm going to ask you for 3 times more than I really want or need, and you know my diamond's worth $100,000, if I say, hey, will you give me $30,000 for my diamond, what are you likely to say?
Well, I'd probably try and give you a little less than that.
See, you're a great negotiator. I like that. You're a good negotiator. Some people might not be quite as good as you. They may say, done. You just offered me, I just made $70,000 on the deal because I know I can sell this for $100,000. You might get $80,000 out of me, or $90,000, right? But if you say $30,000 and I'm thinking I'm getting three times, I might have left. If I offer you $30,000 and you're really willing to pay me $100,000, do you see how I may have left $70,000 on the table? Let's reverse the scenario. Let's say that you know the diamond's worth $100,000 and I don't, and you come to me and you say, I'm going to lowball you. Offer me $70,000 for the diamond, even though it's worth $100,000. Go ahead.
All right. Tell you what, I'll give you $70,000 for that diamond.
Done. I say done. Why? Because you just offered me 7 times more than I really wanted or needed. Now, do you see how what could you have said instead? What could you have said instead? I could have said, well, $10,000. And then you would have really made some money on me, right? Instead of having to pay me $70,000. Now, let me tell you one more story, and then later on we're going to talk about how this relates to getting past a gatekeeper in an organization. I have a friend named Eric. Eric said to me, hey, X, because everyone calls me X. He said, hey, would you like to help me negotiate on a car? I really want to negotiate for this. I need to buy a new car, and I know you like to negotiate. Will you come help me? And I said, sure. So we went down to the dealership when we got in this shiny blue Mustang, and we drove it up and down the road. And we were saying nice things about it. You could hear the purr. And Mustangs have a nice purr to them. And it was just a good-looking car. Anyway, we'd get back to the dealership, and I said something like this to the sales guy. I said, "We're going to need a good deal on this car for my friend Eric." And he looked at me and he said, "Well, what do you need?" Which is a great question to ask, right? What do I need? Well, what if I just say $3,000? Give us $3,000 off the car and we're good. Why is that maybe not negotiating as well as I can for my friend Eric?
He may be willing already to give you $10,000 off.
What if he's willing to give me $10,000? Exactly. I have no idea what he's willing to give me off. So if I say $3,000, I might have shot myself in the foot, just like in the diamond scenario. Well, the principle, remember, a principle like gravity, gravity works everywhere. It works on the other side of the world. This principle here works everywhere. I love principles because they work in insurance, they work in financial planning, they work with your relationships, they work everywhere. If you can slow down and understand the other position first, it will help you. Now, this is what happened in this car buying story. He said, "What do you need?" Now, this is a principle and this is a principle, right? But what's an actual technique? So you can have principles that align, you can have techniques that align with the principle, or you can have techniques that don't align with the principle. For example, I could be walking along a cliff and I could fall off a cliff in Zion somewhere and die. What's a principle of understanding this? What's a technique that I could use to understand the sales position, the sales guy's position first? I'm going to show you one that I use. When people ask me to name my position first, I use a two-step process. And I go like this. Number one, I want to make them feel good for asking. How would you do that? How would you make someone feel good for asking? He says, "What do you need?" Just thank them. Thank you, Kurt. Yeah, exactly. You could just thank them. What else? What else could you do? That's a great one. I really like that one. Thank you. I'm going to thank you as well. What's another thing you could do? That's a great way. So what you can do is you can make them feel good for asking, and that brings us to our second point, which we'll address in just a second. Let me give you a couple more examples that you could use. You could say, "Great question. I'm glad you asked me. Thank you for asking. Thanks for taking my needs into consideration," like Kurt said. Then you can return with the question. And so this is how it worked in real life. He said, "What do you need?" And I used my two-step process. I said, "Great question. I'm glad you asked me. Will you just go back to your boss and ask him how low he can go? I mean, how low can you go?" What do you think he said when I said that? I wish he would have said that. He didn't. You know what he said? He said, "I can't just go back to my boss and ask him how low I can go. You have to give me something so I can take it to him." So did my technique work?
No.
No, it didn't work. So what do you think I did?
At least a plan of the
seat. What's that?
Plan of the
seat. No, what do you mean by that?
Well,
this is what he said. Let me tell you this. I said, I tried to do it again. Now, by the way, this technique doesn't work for everybody, okay?
It doesn't work until 8 tries.
8 tries? It's possible it could take 8 tries. You're exactly right.
That's what I'm saying.
Uh-huh. I think you bring a good point. You just have to be persistent. That's another principle, by the way, is hard work and persistence, which we could talk about. And I think that there is something to that. What he said to me, though, he said, "I can't just go back there and ask my boss. I need you to give me something." And so I just repeated my two-step process. I tried to make him feel good for asking, number one, and then return with a question. I said, "You know what? I can tell you've been doing this for a while. You seem like you're a good sales guy. I just need you to go back to your boss and find out how low you can go. How low can you go?" And we probably went back and forth 3 or 4 times. Now, he eventually went back and he decided to ask his boss how low he could go. This was years ago. This was a base level Mustang. The purchase price on this was $24,600. And he went back there for a few minutes and he came back up and he said, "Maybe we can do $21,600. So he came down 3,000. Now, whenever somebody brings me their first offer, I'm usually not that happy about it. And I did something like this, okay? By the way, one time I had marker on my hand, the marker, and I had a streak across my head. Do I have marker on my head today? Okay, good. So, and I actually said two words. I said, that's trouble. So it looks something like this. That's trouble. What do you think he did? He came down another 1,000. So I was trying not to smile, actually, because I think I got about 500 off here and about 500 off here, right? But was it really my words? They say 93% of what you're saying, you're not saying with your words. You're saying it with the way you hold yourself, your tone of voice, the way you carry yourself. Only 7% is your words. So there was probably a lot more said by my body language, right, than the actual words. But these are good words. Anyway, we talked some more. We decided not to buy the car. And we probably took about 3 or 4 steps towards the door like this. And in desperation, he cried out, maybe we can do 19.6. Okay, so he came down. Now, so I probably was averaging $200 or $300 a step, maybe. If it was 3 or 4 steps towards the door. What do you mean? I chose not to let it tick me off. In fact, but you could, absolutely. If you were a little ticked off, I wouldn't blame you.
But I think that's the very worst part. Yeah, act like
absolutely. I wouldn't act like I'm ticked off.
Wow, really? You are really doing me a favor.
Thank you. Right.
Wow. How did you accomplish that?
I like what you... Absolutely, you could do that. Absolutely.
Or you could act ticked off, and I promise you won't come down anymore.
Right. We decided not to buy the car. We did walk away from this car. But let me ask you this. Who was naming the numbers?
He was.
Did I tell the story correctly here?
Well, except that you were causing him to name the numbers.
He was naming the numbers. I was saying, great question, I'm glad you asked me. How low can you go? And he was coming back to me.
Exactly.
Right. And now here's the thing. Is it bad to name your position? By the way, thanks for your participation. I may have asked the question wrong, so it may be my fault.
I'm old.
He was naming the numbers, and frankly, that's the way I like it. Okay? Have you ever heard the old adage that he who names the number first loses? Now, I really don't like that, because I really like win-win negotiation, so I don't really like that phrase. But there is a little bit of truth to it. Now, what does this have to do with getting past gatekeepers and selling to big organizations? I'll tell you what I'm going to tell you a little bit later. I want you to hold on to this thought, because we're going to address this. But what I'm going to do really quick here is I'm going to put you in groups of two just for a few minutes. So you two on the back row there, and then you two here. You two here, you two there, and then you can be a threesome there. What I'd like to have happen really quick. And by the way, if this seems a little bit weird, it's supposed to, I want it to, but I want you to try something for just 2 minutes here. I'm going to have one of you is going to ask a question, and it can be anything. It could be, where'd you go to lunch yesterday? The other one of you is going to use a two-step process, okay? And here's the thing. If you say Subway, you lose, okay? You can't answer the question. I can see a few smiles here. So you have to, let me give you an example how this would work. Somebody says, where'd you go to lunch today? So, Brian, will you ask me? Great question. I'm glad you asked me. Why do you ask? Do you see how I did that? Okay. Great question. I'm glad you asked me. And I want you to practice it. And if it seems a little weird, a little bit kind of manipulative or whatever it is, that's okay. We'll talk about it afterwards, okay? So I'm going to go around to each group and just see that you do it. I want one of you to have a chance doing it and the other one have a chance to answer with the two-step process. And then I want you to switch and the other person gets a chance. So you have, let's say, 2.5 minutes, okay? Go ahead. Go ahead, I'm listening. Okay, perfect. Okay, that was a good one, I like it. How's it going here? Can you show me one example? You did it perfect. Okay, switch and do it again. You guys did it great. You got it great. That was the same question, so. You get bonus points if it's an insurance question. Okay. Want to teach one of these here? Oh, perfect. Perfect. Okay. Can you show me one here? Thanks for your participation, by the way. I really appreciate it. Can you show me one question?
That's a good question. Why do you want to know?
Perfect. Okay. Okay. Perfect. And I heard you guys did a great. I saw that. Okay. Perfect. Okay. So, thank you. Let me tell you this. Whenever I teach this, for the rest of the class, I oftentimes can't get a straight answer. Say, what do you think about this? And everyone says, well, great question. I'm glad you asked. Don't do this at home. I mean, can you imagine, honey, will you take out the trash? That's a great question. Why would you ask me that? However, the reason I wanted you to practice this is because in real life, these situations, nobody comes up to you and says, all right, you ready? Because I'm going to have you name your negotiating position. It just comes out fast. How would this come out in an insurance situation? How could somebody ask you? What's something that could come up? Yeah, how much is this going to cost me? Now, it's not bad to name your position. The principle just says you'll do better if you understand their position first, right? Is it bad to name what your premium is? Of course not. You can name what the premium is. Now, I want you to hold on to this because we're going to get to it later. And I'm going to tell you another story because this is a big piece about how to get past gatekeepers to the decision maker, but I'm not going to tell you why until later in the class. I'm going to tell you another story. I was at a bank once and I had a problem with my account. It was a pretty big problem, so I went into the bank and I asked for some help. I said, can you help me fix this problem with my account? And there was a gentleman there who said, sure. And he spent a lot of time. He helped me fix the problem with my account. Well, when he was done, I said something like this to him. I said, can I get the email to your boss? And he looked at me kind of funny. I could tell by the way he looked at me that he was more used to negative feedback than positive feedback. But I said, you know what I'd like to do? I'd like to write your boss a letter and tell him what a great job you did. Almost, not quite. But he gave me his email. I went home and I wrote an email like this. It said, I spoke briefly with Jeff today. He was very professional and helpful. He deserves a raise and a promotion. He's really an asset to your team. And I sent it to his boss. And then I copied him on the email. So I CC'd him on it. He could say I was saying really nice things about him to his boss. I didn't think anything about it. It took me maybe 3 or 4 minutes. I went home. I came back to the bank a week or two later, and I'm standing there in line, back when you actually had to go to the bank. Now it's online, right? Well, so I'm standing there in line. There's maybe 5 or 10 people ahead of me, and somebody who I didn't even recognize came up to me, and he said, Mr. Anderson, can I help you with your banking? And he took me from the back of the line. He let me do my banking in front of everyone else. You would have thought I had $10 million in the bank, which I didn't, okay? The thing that was funny is it happened again and again when I came back to this bank. They treated me like a king. Now, why did that happen? What do you think caused that to happen? Honestly. That's right. It did. It bought me some points. I say that's exactly right. Sometimes when I teach this class, people say, well, he probably just, if other people wanted you to write a nice letter to the boss for them too, right? That could have happened. Well, what's the underlying principle like gravity that was going on here? The underlying principle. Not the technique. The technique was me complimenting him to his boss and CCing him on the email. What was the principle? Absolutely.
They are a good person.
I think you're absolutely right. Bart, thank you. Kurt. Bart, you said it right on the head. Thank you. Honey works better than vinegar. It's really, you could call it kindness, you could call it the golden rule. There's a number of different things you could call this. Honey works better than vinegar. I want to meet you because you're a good person. But let me fast forward a few years. Oh, Bart, did you have a comment?
I had tried the same thing.
Did you?
Yeah.
Right. And you know, the world is drowning in negativity, and people think positivity, like you said, Bart, is a breath of fresh air. Let me tell you something. Fast forward a few years, I'm sitting in a high-level director's office in New York. The guy looks at me and he says, "You are the only salesperson I've ever let into me to talk to me about the particular product I was selling." He said, "You're the only salesperson I've ever let in." And I was a little surprised because competition was fierce. And he said, "The reason you're here is because you were nice to my secretary." He said, "I talk to my secretary more than I talk to my wife." And a lot of salespeople don't get that. And you may ask, "Well, what did I do to get into a high-level director's office in New York? What did I do?" I'm going to tell you, it was exactly the same thing that I did at the bank. And it wasn't rocket science. I didn't invent this. The principle of the golden rule is not something I invented, but the technique here, let me show you what happened here. If you're going to sell insurance or anything else to a big company, you're going to have to make sure to talk to the right person, right? And usually, in a big company, you have a decision maker. In fact, you may have a number of decision makers, but in this, and a lot of times the decision maker is the CEO or the mayor or the superintendent or somebody who's kind of up the line. Underneath the decision maker, you may have a VP level, okay? You may have under that a director level. You may under that have another manager level, okay? So when you're approaching an organization like this, let me tell you what happened with this story first, and we'll go back to this. I actually sent the decision maker an email. And guess what happened to my email? It very may well have. Nothing. I sent him an email. Silence. By the way, if all you're doing is emailing, you're probably going to get silence. A lot of these decision makers get 200 emails a day from salespeople. Do you think they have time to talk to 200 salespeople a day? They don't. It's just going to get ignored. But what happened is I decided to call in and talk to him, and guess who I ran into? What'd you say? Right, like it was actually, he called him her secretary, but I call them gatekeepers. They could be an administrative assistant, exactly. They could be a secretary. There's any of a number of different titles they could be. But I ran into the secretary, and guess what she told me when I asked to talk to him? Exactly. By the way, they're always busy. They're always golfing or in a conference or in a meeting. I bet you even if they're sitting there in their office twiddling their thumbs, they're still probably unavailable. Would you agree? And so what I did is I actually decided to, I said something like this. I said, maybe what I could do is resend the email that I sent before. Would that be okay? And she said, that'd be fine. And I said, maybe what I could do is just copy him I could copy it to you to make sure he gets it. Would that be okay? And she said, sure. And then I tried to find something that I could sincerely. Now, by the way, it has to be sincere. Be sincere. And she was genuinely courteous and helpful to me, which most high-level gatekeepers are, so it's not hard to find something to be sincere about. But I said to her, you've been very courteous. You've been very professional. I talk to a lot of people all day, and you've been phenomenal. I'm going to let your boss know that. And I meant it. It wasn't a schmoozy kind of thing. It was just me being sincere. And what I did is I resent the email to the boss, the one I sent a week ago or so. I copied it to her, and on the first line, and by the way, I did this while she was on the phone. I said, can you hold for a second? I'm just going to send this email again. I put, dear Mr. Decision Maker, first line, I spoke briefly with Janice. She was very professional, courteous, and helpful. She's an asset to your team. I'm going to be in New York on these days. I sent it to her boss. I copied her on the email. She took one look at that email. She goes, thank you for the compliment. Thank you. And I said, well, thank you. Thank you so much for being courteous and professional. And not everybody is as courteous and professional as you. I want your boss to know it. Do you know what? That me being kind to her was what got me in front of that gatekeeper. Now, there's a principle here. The principle underneath everything is called the Golden Rule. Now, there's a lot of other names for the Golden Rule. One of the new names that they've come up with recently is called positive reinforcement. It's the same thing as the Golden Rule, but it's more scientific. People think it's more complicated. Let's talk about positive reinforcement from a scientific standpoint. What is positive reinforcement? Any ideas? Right. Are you a psychology major? No, I am a psychology major. There's a joke with that that says, I'm a psychology major. Would you like fries with that? Because you can't do anything with a psychology major. Except for maybe instruct, right? Here. Anyway, he's exactly right. Tell me your name again.
Eric,
thank you for that. Eric says it's rewarding. He's exactly right. When somebody does something that you want, you reward it with positive attention. Now, what they've found, they've actually done studies, and they've found that positive reinforcement is more effective than punishment. I mean, if you want to shape someone's behavior, punishment does not work as well. It's more effective than negative reinforcement. And that's a different thing, but we're not going to get into it because we don't have time. Let me tell you what I mean. You water the behaviors you want to see grow with attention. Have you ever seen a parent come in and they said, I can't believe you didn't make your bed again and you were late to class and you got a C on your test, and they give them all kinds of attention for what? Stuff they don't want to see happen again. When in reality, what they found scientifically, that positive reinforcement is better than punishment or negative reinforcement. What's better? Catch your kid doing something right. I tried this with my daughter. My daughter once got up, she got ready for school, she got her backpack on, she got dressed, she said, and she kind of surprised us, right? And I told my wife, I said, Katie, let's go ahead and give her a lot of attention for this. Let's try. Let's see if this positive reinforcement thing works out. And so we did. We said, hey, Chloe, you got ready for school, you got your dress, you got your stuff, your lunch ready, and guess what happened? She started doing it more and more. In fact, she does it all the time now on her own. But what happened here was the same thing at the bank. What if I decide to punish the people at the bank instead of giving them positive reinforcement? Let me give you an example. Let's say I went to the bank. When my account's messed up, I say, I can't believe you guys messed up my account. You ever do this again? I'm never going to bring my business back. And by the way, I want to talk to your boss and tell him what horrible service this is. Do you think I could have bullied my way in the short run and got what I wanted? Sure. In the short run, I could have got what I wanted in the short run. But what happens a week or two later when I come back to the bank? What happens? They say, watch out for that guy, he's a time bomb. Don't want to talk to that guy, right? So what got me treated like a king again and again was positive reinforcement. Now, let me tell you this. I hear sales methodologies that tell you that if you can't get past the gatekeeper, you should act a little high and mighty and say, now what is your name and what is your title? Kind of make them feel like they're the low ones and you're the important guy and you need to talk to the important guy. Do you think that might work once or twice? Maybe. But what about getting the deal? When this guy looks at me and says, I talk to my secretary more than I talk to my wife. And some sales guys don't get that. If there's one thing I want you to get in this class is that there's principles everywhere that govern everything, everything. I'm sitting on a jet and I see this. I look out, I'm saying, how is this jet keeping above the ground with its weighs about as much as 50 trucks? And it's Bernoulli's principle. If the wind goes faster over the wing than it does on the bottom, it sucks the plane up. That principle's been around since the dawn of time, but they figured it out about 100 years ago. Okay? Everywhere is principles. There's principles in human relations. There's principles that work with secretaries, with your clients, with your family, with your children, everywhere. And if you can find techniques that align with the principles, you can go places. If you decide that the principle doesn't matter and you're just going to do something else, you can figuratively fall off a cliff, just like gravity. So you can either make $1 million with your hydroelectric dam or you can fall off the cliff. You can listen to positive reinforcement, or you can say, oh, that doesn't matter. It's kind of a good idea, but it doesn't, yeah, whatever. And it's like ignoring gravity, right? Now, Let's talk about this. Where do you start? Where do you start when you're trying to get into an organization that might have 10,000 employees and you want to sell them a group policy or take care of their investments or their 401ks or whatever it is? Where do you start? Any ideas? Where do you start? That's true. You could do that. And I've tried doing that, and that's a good thing to do, and sometimes people will. The problem is, and I'm not saying that's bad, because there's you could have some success with that, but let's say I sell this person here, and they love my product. They're salivating. They love it. The problem is they're not the decision maker. I can sell this person. I can sell this person. I can sell in a family. I can sell the husband, but if the wife's really the decision maker, am I going to make any money? Maybe not. Let me tell you what I do. And I'm going to tell you how I discovered this principle. I actually called in to talk to someone who I thought was the right person. And they were kind of a level or two down. And guess what she did? She hung up on me, and pretty rudely. And afterwards I thought, you know what, I still want to sell to this organization. She's probably not the only one in that organization. And I actually called her boss within the next 10 or 15 minutes. And got through to her, surprisingly, which wasn't normal. But I got through to her boss, and she liked what I had to say and set up a meeting. And guess who she invited to the meeting? The same person who had hung up on me. So she says, let's have a teleconference, and I'm going to invite my director of someone. And I thought, oh no, she just hung up on me. Well, we had this teleconference, and guess what happened? Do you think that the person who hung up on me was rude to me? She was actually really, really polite. Why? Because the boss was there. Now, so let's talk about this. I've decided whenever I sell to an organization, I've sold to quite a few now, I'm going to start higher than I think I need to. I actually start at the top, to be honest with you. I don't even care if it's a CEO. Now, some of you say, but the CEO doesn't handle insurance, or the CEO doesn't handle this or that. Let me tell you why I do that. And it might be a little intimidating to start at the top. But I'll call in and talk to this. I'll send an email to the top person, knowing that it will probably get ignored. I'll then try to call in and talk to the top person, and what usually happens? They're not available. But you know what that does? If the secretary's been polite, and if I can find something that I can sincerely compliment her on, I do that. And I say, thanks so much for helping me. I'm going to send it. And I build a little bit of that relationship and use positive reinforcement like I did at the bank. And build a relationship with her, okay? Now, she probably, because she's going to like me, I hope, right? If she likes me and I say to her, well, this is what I'm doing, and she says, well, this isn't the right person. CEO isn't the right person to talk to. Who you need to talk to is someone down here in HR. And you know what I can then ask her to do? I can say, well, will you forward that email? By the way, she likes me now because I just complimented her to her boss, right? I say, will you forward that email to this person in HR? And usually if I've treated her like gold, she's willing to do that. Now, here's the thing. I said, you forward that email to this person in HR and copy me on it. Would that be okay? And she says, sure. If the guy in HR gets an email from the secretary of the CEO, do you think that holds a little more weight than if I just email the HR guy? Do you think it holds a little more weight bouncing off the secretary, the CEO there? I call this, by the way, jiu-jitsu email. Okay, what's jujitsu? Jujitsu is if I have a 300-pound guy running at me, going to tackle me, I have to use his weight to win, right?
Are you inferring I'm 300 pounds?
I didn't even point to you. If anyone's 300 pounds, it's me. I was talking about somebody. I was envisioning somebody running up the thing here, trying to tackle me. Do you see what I'm saying? By the way, hope nobody. There was no. I was envisioning. Okay. Hope nobody took that the wrong way. So, HR, I can use this to my advantage. Now, here's one of the things that happens a lot. What if you call up and they say, well, what are you selling? Now, remember, we're going to go back to our negotiation thing. When somebody says, what are you selling? And you go, insurance. What do they say next? We've got somebody who handles that for us. Thanks, we're not interested. Right? Did you notice how, let's play this one more time. I'm going to play just this. We're going to go back to negotiation for a second here. 10 minutes, perfect. If I'm a DJ and I have my music, and I say, hey, will you let me do a party for you? And Michael says, do you play country music? So ask me if I play country music. Oh, yes. Watch what a good salesperson I'm going to be. Oh, yeah, I play country music. I play Garth Brooks. I play this. I play that. I play this. And then Michael looks at me and he says, that's funny. I hate country music. And I won't even do anybody business with anybody who does country music. You're not the guy for me. Sorry. What could I have done? I could have used my two-step process, which was make him feel good for asking and return with a question. I said, Michael, great question. Help me understand why you ask. And he could have said, well, it's because I really hate country music, but I like rap. And I can say, okay, and then I can adjust my sales presentation to that. Now, I don't know what this company needs. Do you have different types of products to sell? Like what? Give me an example. What do you have to sell?
Life, health,
disability, investments. Okay. So when I call in and she says, well, what are you selling? And I say, insurance. I just named my position and I lose. If somebody asked me what I was selling, I might say something like this. I might use my two-step process and say, you know what? It's a great question, Carol. Thanks for asking. Really need to do is understand the vision of the CEO just a little better to see what he's trying to do. And there may be a fit and there may not be a fit. Now, look, do you see how I said it really non, I've got to say it really non, we only have 10 minutes, I could go into another thing here. But do you see how I didn't say, hey, and we have a great product and it's a great product, it's the best product you've ever seen, and I get really intense. I don't be like that. I just say it may be a fit, it may not be. I need to be really low key. Could I have 5 or 10 minutes to just chat with the CEO? And if there's not a fit, no big deal, but I need a few minutes. Did you notice I didn't say insurance? I didn't say real estate. I didn't say something that I was trying to do, right? I said, great question. I'm glad you asked. I need to understand. And truthfully, you're aligning yourself with the principal. I just need to understand his vision and goals for the company. Maybe there's a fit, maybe there's not. Will you do that? She said, well, he might have some time on Thursday or something where I could get you in for 5 minutes. You see that negotiation principle? And I wanted you to try it because you're going to call people up and they're going to throw you these porcupine questions, what they call them, something. They're going to throw you a question where you can't. It's not bad to answer, but you may do better if you listen, if you understand their position first. Let's talk about one more principle because we have a few minutes. What happens when you chase a dog? What happens when you run? It chases you. So I'm going to make a confession, and all of you might decide to leave the classroom now. Are you ready for my confession? You may not want to hear me after I confess this. Years ago, I did door-to-door sales. Now, by the way, door-to-door sales can be... Why do people hate salespeople? Let's talk about it really quick here. Why do people hate salespeople? Somebody said pushy? Who said it? Pushy? Why else? Interruption? What else? Wasting time.
Dishonest.
What else? That's a good enough list for the time we got. By the way, I teach this class a lot of times, and I hear these same things multiple times. And you know what I think of when I see a salesperson like this? I think that's an insecure salesperson. What happens is most good relationships are a dance. You've seen it on TV. They kind of dance like this. They get together. They go get closer and they get further away. Have you seen the popular dancing shows? One of them might spin out. Well, what happens in a lot of sales relationships is one of the clients steps back. And what an insecure salesperson says, oh no, I'm going to lose this deal, and they chase him. So it goes like this. I need a little time to think this over and talk it over with my wife. The salesperson goes, I need this to pay my mortgage payment, and if I don't get it, I'm going to die. So you better do it now because we've got to get whatever it is and blah, 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 blah. And the person says, well, all I needed was a little bit of space. And what happens is they start chasing their client away. What happens is when somebody backs up, you have to back up with them, and it's scary because it sounds like you're going to throw the deal away, but you're not. Let me tell you how this works. I need to talk this over with my wife. Okay. Take 10 years if you need it. Take as much time as you need. Do it sincerely. You can take as much time as you need. If you need 10 years, take it. Do you see how they backed up and then I backed up? I've actually said that to someone. Somebody said, I need a little bit of time to think this over. And I said, you know what? Take as much time as you need. If you need to take 10 years or a few years to think about it, do it. And they said, I don't need 10 years. I only need until Friday. So they step back in. And then that gives me an opportunity to step back in. So you can go like this, right? But the principle is, when you're on the phone trying to get into a gatekeeper, if you get really intense and you try to sell the gatekeeper, don't do that. Don't try to sell the secretary. Your only purpose is to make a relationship with her and have you get an appointment. The secretary is not going to make the decision. Don't tell the secretary all the great things about the insurance. Leave that for when you're talking to the CEO. What you want to do, though, is when you call in, you need to be, let her chase you almost. Like, say something like this. This may not even be a good fit. I'm not sure if my product's going to work with your company or not. But I do need to see a few minutes with the CEO. Now, why would you say it nonchalantly like that? Because if you're too intense on the phone with her, or you won't shut up, and you keep talking, what happens is she's going to know. She's like, I don't want to put that sales guy in front of the CEO. He's gonna be mad at me. I need to put someone who's really low-key. So be low-key with her. Don't try to sell her. Let her chase you a bit. I told you the door-knocking story because I noticed when I used to knock doors, if I got really enthusiastic and I told everything about how great my product was, and I was like this, guess what would happen? People would say, Klingon on the starboard bow. How do I get this guy off my doorstep? But if I did something else, which was just tell the truth, watch this. Let's pretend there's a door here. Door opens. What would happen if you just saw someone standing on your doorstep looking the other way? Hello? Yeah. I might say something like this. I know I'm probably the last person you want to see on your doorstep. And you're probably not even interested in what I have to say. Did you see that? Did you see how little intense I was? And I just told the truth, by the way. I wasn't being anything pushy, interruption, wasting time, or dishonest. I was just telling the truth. The truth was, I know I'm probably the last person you want to see on your doorstep. Is that true? Yeah, I'm a door-to-door sales guy. And you're probably not even interested in what I have to say. Is that true? Got to tell you this. The best sales guy I have ever seen, he was nothing like this. And he made millions and millions of dollars. He had a lisp. He was not a polished guy. But he made so much money, his mantra was tell people the truth and tell it to them quickly. That's a principle, right? Honesty. You tell the truth all the time, people trust you. You get on the doorstep. When I would say, I'm the last person you want to see on your doorstep, you're probably not even interested in what I have to say. What do you think they would do?
Well, you're here.
What do you have to say? That's exactly right. So they pulled me in. If I got pushy like this, guess what? Don't want to talk to me. But if I just say the truth and pull back, they'd let them pull me in. These are principles, you know, we could talk about these a lot more, but will you think about changing the way you do things? If you're not understanding the other person's position first, will you do that? Will you? Will you try to find ways to align yourself with real principles? These are principles. When I hear people say, I've got the 7 secrets to help you succeed, I'm always a little skeptical, but you want to know why? I think the ways to succeed have been around forever. They're ancient. Now, there might be new techniques, like copying a compliment to the boss on email. That's something that didn't exist 30 years ago because we didn't have email. The techniques can change, but the principles beneath them, like the golden rule and honesty and understanding the other person first, those don't change. Will you make efforts to do that? If you want more information, feel free to get a hold of me. I do have a book that I wrote on the subject, and you're welcome to look at that as well. And Bart, I thank you for the time to present here. Thank you.